Hey, thanks for spending time with me. Rusnowski here. This is Porchlight. Making a personal commitment to devote one's time is a choice familiar to the vast majority of us here on Earth. This choice may capture not only one's interest, but over time might define an identity. The ancient heroic myths tell us that an enormous risk will be taken in quest of anything that has meaning and value. This is especially true when two lives have a shared commitment. Along that journey, you will see yourself clearly reflected in someone's eyes. You may be called upon to meet their needs as they will meet yours. In time, the story of your connection will be told. Part of that enormous risk is understanding the story's end will involve unspeakable loss, but perhaps include the chance to say, "I'm so happy I got to do this with you." Currently, 45% of American households provide a home for a dog. Accompanying this, a staggering growth in the number of strays, a 30% increase just over the last 3 years. Dogs remain the most popular choice for a pet. They are loyal by nature. They imagine running in packs, even if it's just the two of you out on a walk. They will accept you as head of this pack, and by virtue of another daily ritual you perform, will see you as the mighty hunter, reliably providing food. Beyond their loyalty, what dogs will offer you in return is a gift every human craves, to be completely accepted by someone based on whatever they know of you. You two will only be together here for a relatively short time. Somehow, you have found and chosen each other. This is the miracle that surrounds the risk. When a dog is in your life, you will be able to say, "I'm so happy I got to do this with you," and know you will be perfectly understood, even though your words never are.
Well, I feel all right this morning now. I want everybody to know that I was the one to say, "You ain't nothing but a hound dog, quit snooping around my door.
on to all of you.
Summer's day, skipping rocks and catching toads, when I came upon some blue tick puppies in a box by the side of the road. They were freshly weaned, the sign said free. Soon I'm begging Papa, can I keep him? They say the quiet ones are the best for hunting. Papa shook his head, no, just sleeping. He's an old hound dog, just an old hound dog. Just an old hound dog. Well, I call that dog Ulysses from a story Mama read me in a book. When I'd yell his name, sometimes I came, but mostly he'd just turn and look. He was sleeping in the sun, moving to the shade, hanging round for his next meal. A couple table scraps behind my mama's back, a little skillet grease poured on potato peel. For an old hound dog, just an old hound dog. They're lying on the front porch while we talk, just an old hound dog. It was. No matter how many times I remind myself, it never seems to ease the loss. Spent 14 years sound asleep or near, till living finally turned him loose. Toward the end they'd say, if he sleeps all day, hell has got himself a good excuse. He's an old hound dog, just an old hound dog. Just an old hound dog. Old Yeller. Old Shep. Huckleberry Hound.
Maybe over the course of your life, you have known an individual who has a special resonance with living things. They might possess a green thumb when it comes to gardens and houseplants. I have heard of a gifted few who are able to place a crying baby next to their heart, and within seconds, the child is chill. This is not an acquired skill, I'm told, nor does it appear to be genetic in origin. The closest science has gotten to explaining it is the discovery that there are indeed people who attract more than their fair share of mosquitoes. I am not sure that one would refer to Pete Giordano as a dog whisperer, but the canines in Pete's life invariably trust him, respect him, and seem to want to be in his company more and more as time goes by. The story of Pete's partnership with his current four-legged friend also involves everyday magic not easily explained. How what first seemed improbable is now seen as serendipitous. Well, good on both of them. After all, what is alive should thrive, and bless the intuitive soul who knows that healing must happen first. Pete, did you have a dog in your life when you were young?
I did, but my parents weren't inclined to have as many dogs as I would have liked. And so we had one when we lived in Terre Haute. We had a little black and white thing. He was difficult. I mean, not unfriendly, but just kind of wild and woolly. I did not have dogs again until when I graduated from college. My wife and I stopped at my dad's in Atlanta, and I was working in his factory, and we found this little puppy out behind the factory. So we took him up to the North Country with us. His name was Jasper. Dogs were an integral part of our life, and then kids came along, and dogs kind of start taking the back seat sometimes when that happens. We'd come home a lot of times, and he'd be asleep on the couch, on the porch. Well, this one time we came home, and he didn't wake up. And he ended up getting buried where Dale Jones' dog was buried. Stranger's Hill was named after his dog, Stranger. So Jasper is up on Stranger's Hill someplace.
I remember your telling me the situation that led to you and Little Man coming together. Could you explain that?
Sure. Well, I had had contact with my daughter's dog, Gus. This won't translate to your listeners.
It's a great name for a dog.
And I would be taking care of Gus quite a bit when Becca would be traveling or gone someplace. And so I did a lot of dog sitting with him. But then during COVID and everything was shut down, Becca was really wanting me to get a dog. And she was looking on those websites and sending me leads of this dog or that dog. We were kind of looking within an hour of Bloomington or an hour of Pittsburgh, where she was living. And I kind of was narrowing it down as to what I was looking for in a dog. When she sent me this one, this was through a shelter near Steubenville, Ohio. And I looked at it. He looked to be the right size and all. So what I did was make arrangements to see the dog as I was driving to Pittsburgh from Bloomington. So I came out and met the dog and learned that he had come out of a hoarding situation where he was one of 13 dogs. And I could tell that he wasn't totally scarred. He was friendly. He was a little bit skittish, but that was understandable. They mentioned a couple things. Apparently, he had never been outside before. 3 years old he was at the time. And so I picked him up, tossed him in the car, and we headed home.
Once I had a little dog, I called him Cracker Jack. He had a spot around one eye that looked just like a patch. His legs were way too long, and he was awkward as could be. He wasn't much to look at, but he looked all right to me. I found him by the riverbank just wandering about. He was cold and hungry and his ribs were sticking out. I snapped my fingers, whistled when he came, I picked him up. I was just a kid and Cracker Jack was just a pup. I took him home and fed him till he couldn't eat no more. I took him to my room and put a blanket on the floor. After that, beside my bed is where he'd always sleep. Each night in my prayers, I'd pray the Lord his soul to keep. Cracker Jack, the best friend that I ever had was Cracker Jack. But he was more than that. A playmate, a companion, he was love and understanding. That was Cracker Jack, the best friend that I ever had was Cracker Jack. But he was more than that. kid could want I had in Cracker Jack. Cracker Jack would run to meet me after school each day. He'd jump and wag his tail and look at me as if to say, I love you and I missed you and I'm glad you're home again. I knew just how he felt, 'cause me and Cracker Jack was friends. Through the woods and fields we would often roam about. When we got in trouble we would help each other out. I could run almost as fast as Cracker Jack could run. We had a lot in common and we had a lot of fun. He was always with me when I was growing up. We shared each other's good times and we shared each other's love. He only lives in memories now, but often I think back to the days of childhood, the days of Cracker Jack. Cracker Jack, the best friend that I ever had was Cracker Jack. But he was more than that, a playmate, a companion. He was love and understanding. That was Cracker Jack, the best friend that I ever had was Cracker Jack. But he was more than that, everything a kid could want I had in Cracker Jack.
He wasn't as clingy as you might think. He had a little bit of leash aggression.
What's that?
That is where a dog will be aggressive on a leash that may not be aggressive in other situations. That was the big apprehension I had when I got Little Man, was that he would have aggressive tendencies that would not go away. You always feel sorry for those folks who have the dogs that just absolutely go wild, and you can't even stop and talk to them. And he wasn't that way, but sometimes he would just get a little bit aggressive on the leash. It annoyed me. I didn't like it. I didn't want that kind of behavior from him. So I worked with him really hard to kind of transition him out of that, and it took a long time. And what I noticed was he's keying off of me. Dogs are very empathic. They can sense their owner's feelings and emotions at a deep level, even sometimes when you don't. And when I was walking with him, what I started to notice is he would pick up on any people walking forward. Either it would be me uncertain about the people or me worried that he would be aggressive. So I just started calming him down as we'd approach people and greeting the people myself, because if he could tell I was friendly with them, then he would relax. Dogs want to please you. That is in their nature. We as humans have bred them to be desirous of wanting to make us happy. And now when we'll be walking along and we'll pass somebody and I'll say hi to him and he doesn't react or anything, and he'll look at me like, did I do that right? Was I right?
Mary Mac, dressed in black, silver buttons all down her back. High low, tipsy toe, she broke a needle and she can't sew. Walk in the dark, that's a walking bird dog. If you don't know how to do it, I'll show you how to walk the dog. Come on now, come on, come on. That's my mama for 15 cents. See the elephant jump the fence. He jumps so high, he touched the sky. Never got back till the 4th of July. Walking a dog, just a walking bird dog. If you don't know how to do it, I'll show you how to walk a dog. Come on now, come on, come on. Mary, Mary, quite contrary, tell me, how do
Garden Grove. You got silver bells and you got cockleshells. Pretty maids all in a row, walking bird dog. Just a walking bird dog. If you don't know how to do it, show you how to walk a dog. Come on now, come on, come on. Oh, oh. Just a walking. Just a walking. Just a walking. Oh yeah. If you don't know how to do it, I'll show you how to walk a dog. Oh,
how did you select his name?
It was kind of by default, because during the time I had him, as we were going through this process, I just happened to start calling him Little Man. One of the names I tried for him was Tom. But Little Man is what stuck. Are you familiar with the term Waldo?
No.
It is an Italian term. It's spelled W-O-L-I-O. And it essentially means a little man in Italian, because it is a term that Italian men use for young Italian boys. That kind of means, hey, you know, knucklehead. It's a loving term. And so I thought about doing that name, but then I thought, I'm going to have to explain that to everybody.
Little Man is 7 years old right now. And I understand that seven is the point where smaller dogs enter what they consider to be the senior years. If you had an opportunity to just describe Little Man at this point in his life, what are the adjectives you'd use?
He's just a sweet, loving little guy. Very affectionate to people he knows. If you came into our house and sat down, he'd be in your lap in 10 minutes. There's no doubt about it. Our relationship has gotten so close, a lot of times I'll be out someplace visiting with friends or doing something, and I realize, you know, I kind of like to be home with the dog. I really miss them. I mean, anybody who says that a dog can't be an emotional support animal and can't provide that sort of comfort to you hasn't sat next to a sleeping dog ever. Like whether it be Gus or Little Man, and Gus snores a lot. A little rhythmic. It's just very relaxing, and they're very comforting to be around. And I'm really happy about it. I don't know if I could ask for a better dog. He's just really become an integral part of my life.
It all began one day down at the playground. I was playing in a sandbox looking for mineral deposits. I had just dug this swell hole when all of a sudden in rushed this big dog.
Rope! Brave me! Rope! Rope!
Gee, fella, what is it? What's wrong, boy, huh?
We're road catcher.
The dog catcher? Quick, boy, into this hole. I'll save you. Here, put on this hat and try to act natural.
Okay. Hey, you kids seen a stray dog around here?
A dog?
Uh-oh. Okay, thanks.
We did it. You're safe, boy.
Thank you. Thanks a lot.
You're welcome. Don't you have a home of your own?
Uh-oh.
Would you like to be my dog?
Yeah.
Then I brought him home, and he's been mine ever since.
A small framed portrait. A lighted candle. Corner shrine for one Cassius Marcellus Coolidge. There is an old saying that covers many areas of human endeavor. All it takes is one. One hit song, one best-selling novel. In practice, this actually turns out to be as much for precaution as encouragement. Take the money and run might be the real advice. The challenge is that many individuals in this position find they need to keep on running, either in pursuit of a successful sequel or at top speed in the opposite direction after that single title becomes their lasting identity. First line of the bio, first sentence in the obit. One big novel, Margaret Mitchell, Gone with the Wind. You've seen the movie, at least. One big hit song, maybe Jackie Brenston with Rocket 88, the first rock and roll recording. Works of visual art don't generally fall into this category, likely for two reasons. The original painting itself represents the primary value. It isn't duplicated to create its popularity. Also, serious visual artists tend to get known and critiqued through prestigious gallery shows, the solid foundation on which their notoriety is built. You know Whistler's Mother by James McNeill Whistler. But the artist also painted a portrait of his mistress, entitled The White Girl. It, too, is considered a masterpiece. Like many American painters in the 19th century, James Whistler was trained and exhibited in Paris. At the time, this was the litmus test for the serious visual artist. Cassius Marcellus Coolidge began his artistic career writing cartoons for newspapers in upstate New York. At some point, he began to place his portraits of humans in caricatured comic settings with fanciful backgrounds or exaggerated bodies. Cassius always displayed an interest and talent for portraying different breeds of dogs. In 1894, he modified his creative formula and produced his lone masterpiece, an original painting entitled Dogs Playing Poker. Sure, brings back memories of some wood-paneled basement, I bet. Like songwriters and novelists, Cassius Marcellus Coolidge saw his wealth accumulate through duplication and self-imitation. He produced a series of paintings with dogs reading, playing baseball and billiards, even testifying in court. Over a dozen originals in all. Cassius Marcellus Coolidge's body of work was never regarded as serious art, even though at an auction held in 2015, the original Dogs Playing Poker commanded serious money, over $500,000. Just hoping it wound up in a man cave instead of a museum. Hey, nice to be with you. You're listening to Porchlight with Tom Rusnowski.
We'll be right back. You want to see something real funny?
Yeah.
Well, you go on in there and you get me chili powder and pepper and curry and the like. A lot of it, all right?
Here they are.
Now listen, you're going to have some fun. You hear that? Well, you remember how them dogs do when they come through here, so you can tell me about it someday, okay?
She walked through the corn leading down to the river. Her hair shone like gold in the hot morning sun. She took all the love that a poor boy could give her.
She walks through the corn leading down to the river. Her hair shone like gold in the hot morning sun. She took all the love that a poor boy could give her and left me to die like a fox on the run.
Like a fox,
like a fox,
like a fox.
Nearly over, the hounds are at my door.
She walks through the corn leading down to the river. Her hair shone like gold in the hot morning sun. She took all the love that a poor boy could give her and left me to die like a fox on the run.
Like a fox,
like a fox,
like a fox.
Yes, it's true. Sharks and black bears do have a far keener sense of smell. But if you're going to track a fugitive from a backwoods penal farm, employing a bloodhound might be the preferable choice. Per that mashup there, you may think of bluegrass as long preceding rock and roll. Actually, their origins are contemporaneous. The very first recording of that time-honored classic of the genre by none other than Manfred Mann, followed by the more traditional-sounding version from the Country Gentleman 2 years later. They were just showing off with that fourth harmony.
Came in last night at 10:30. That baby of mine wouldn't let me in, so move it on over.
Move it on over.
Move it on over.
Move it on over.
Cause the big dog's moving in. She's changed the lock on our front door. My door key don't fit no more. So get it on over.
Move it on over.
Scoot it on over.
Move it on over.
Move over, skinny dog, cause the fat dog's moving in. This dog house here is mighty small, but it's better than no house at all. So ease it on over. Drag it on over,
move it on over,
move over old dog, cause a new dog's moving in.
Move it on over,
me not to play around, but I done let the deal go down. So pack it on over,
move it on over,
tote it on over,
move it on over,
move over, nice dog, 'cause a mad dog's moving in. She warned me once, she warned me twice, but I don't take no one's advice. So scratch it on over,
I move it on over,
shake it on over,
I move it on over,
move over, short dog, 'cause a tall dog's moving in. Scratching, please, so slide it on over,
move it on over,
sneak it on over,
move it on over,
move over, good dog, 'cause a mad dog's moving in. Remember, pup, before you whine, that side yours and this side mine, so shove it on over,
move it on over,
sweep it on over,
move it on over,
move over, cold dog, 'cause a hot dog's moving in.
For this postcard home, the postmark reads Albany, New York. Advertising has long been ubiquitous in American life, but these days it has become far more virtual, far less tactile. Consider the sturdy wooden rulers or the illustrated wall calendars that were once given out gratis to customers by many local businesses. A reminder of the store or company every time you used that ballpoint pen or matchbook. You might say these items actually fulfilled their intended purpose twice. Promotional premiums often had a preordained shelf life. December soon came and went. One day the ink would run dry. It's not rare, though, for these reminders to have survived the businesses that first issued them. In Syracuse, New York, there was once a stamped metal sign affixed to one of the stone pillars of a railroad overpass. It advertised Cott beverages, specifically their slogan, "It's Cott to be good." In time, Cott was absorbed by a conglomerate, and a clump of hardy weeds grew to obscure the sign. Whatever agreement Cott entered into for its display would lapse. But as recently as 20 years ago, nobody had bothered to salvage the rusted-out sign. There were also two striking three-dimensional advertisements constructed along Broadway in Albany, New York. One was a 15-foot green bottle for Canada Dry, the champagne of ginger ales. The other, even more impressive, high atop a regional warehouse for RCA, the Radio Corporation of America, a 28-foot, 4-ton model of the company's mascot, Nipper, a white terrier with black ears. Early print advertisements for RCA show Nipper tilting his head toward the horn of a gramophone. The catchphrase, his master's voice. The total cost of this ambitious creation in 1958 was $32,000. Worth it? Well, you can't ask RCA, since Nipper's enormous likeness has outlasted its original owner. You might say Nipper has survived its postcard, too. Whatever the current trends, the tactile will always stand a better chance of enduring than the virtual, and continue to inspire many deep memories.
Up a holler limb, Blue chased the possum up a holler limb, Blue chased the possum up a holler limb, the possum growled, Blue whined at him. So hard, shook the ground in my backyard. We lowered him down with a golden chain, and every link we called his name.
Bye, bye.
old Blue, he was a good old hound. You could hear him hollering miles around. When I get to heaven, first thing I'll do is grab my horn and call for Blue.
Let's consider the word willingness for a moment. The value of willingness will always increase during times of discouragement and despair. With it, you can conjure up motivation that may bring about a conscious, constructive response. Current conditions may steady themselves until the clouds lift to allow more light. I don't know if willingness factors into the qualities that a dog exhibits as a pet. Loyalty and devotion are probably more accurate descriptions. Maybe these are the tricks dogs are trying to teach us. Betty Karp married Chico Marx in 1917. The couple soon brought a daughter into the world. Over the next two decades, they were together sporadically due to Chico's increasing success in movies and also due to his addictions to gambling and other women. Chico's addictions were no less a secret than his fame. Betty and Chico would each remarry in 1958 to partners that would remain with them, although for Chico, that only amounted to a couple more years. I'm not sure of the timing or even the exact words of this quote from Betty, but it has always stuck with me. Willingness, devotion, loyalty, any of these qualities might apply here. Betty's words are a simple but genuine expression of love. Perhaps the motivation for them will remain a mystery to us, but probably not to a dog. Quote, "My heart still soars whenever I hear his footsteps." And so, next time.
Song in my heart to sing.
Porchlight is engineered by our radio audio director, Mike Pascash, production assistance from Luann Johnson. Our executive producer is John Bailey. At wfiu.org/porchlight, you will find commentary, postcard images, and an archive of every episode.